Well, we are in, as Jared mentioned, the second part of this series called Root Cause, as we walk through Colossians. And it's based around this idea that whatever seed you plant in your life and whatever is going to take root in your life is going to eventually produce fruit. And it's at the core of this series, and it's the core of what Colossians is all about. And last week we talked about what this book of Colossians will do for you. I love the way Jared pointed out, one, I love steak, but I love that it is the filet mignon is a great example because it's very dense. Every bite, every morsel takes a lot of flavor in it. And a lot of times when we do book studies, we'll do like one chapter at a time, you know. So if we did that, we'd get through this book in 4 weeks. But it's actually going to be about a 10 to 12 week study because every few verses are so dense. And so what this book will do for us, as we looked at last week, one, it's going to till up the soil of our hearts of any unhealthy practices. We talked about last week how we can very quickly kind of make up our own spirituality, take pieces of things we like from different places and create our own God, our own way of thinking, instead of actually leaning into the truths that God has given us. And this will kind of till that up in our lives. And the second thing we'll do, it will pull the weeds of any misplaced hopes, whether that's in our job, our station in life, our government, our systems of living. It'll move our hope back to the source of true hope, which is God. But grateful that this book doesn't just pull up weeds and till up soil. It actually then plants things into our life, and it'll plant the seeds of righteousness that will grow roots. And what that's built around is the supremacy of Christ. And Colossians spends a lot of time talking about who Jesus was, why Jesus' life, death, and resurrection were so important, and what that means for us today. And then that eventually allows us to bear fruit of a cultivated life, which we talked about last week was experiencing freedom in Christ, that we actually aren't bound by rules and laws and things that weigh us down. As we walk in this life and see this cultivated heart come together, we'll start to experience amazing freedom in our lives. And the Apostle Paul and Timothy, who wrote this book, they did so to help this church, the church in Colossae, and us as well, to learn better how to produce the fruit of righteousness in our lives. But it takes more than just wishful thinking or desire for good things to be produced in your life. It takes intention and cultivation to grow these good things in your life. And last week, we actually, if you weren't here, there's some extra seed packets over on the table over there that we invited you to take and start the process of cultivating in your own life a little herb garden, right? And so this is where we have started. You can see there's zero growth so far, but I have planted, as a family, planted three packs of seeds. I think I have watered them correctly. I've done some research, done a little reading, but hopefully over the next few weeks, we'll see some germination start to happen and all the different things I've been reading about what you have to do with these. I am not so sure about the oregano. I think the oregano is going to be the hardest of the three as I was reading, but we'll see. So if you got oregano last week, you might be like, oh my gosh, what did I do? But we're doing this, and I encourage you to take some of these and do it because it will remind you as we study this book that just taking seeds and throwing them in a pot of soil does not automatically produce fruit. It produces what it's designed to do. You have to put energy into it. You have to tend to it. You have to care for it. And the same is true of our hearts. And this is what the book of Colossians really does. It allows us to, gives us tools to tend to our hearts and certain seeds to plant into our life. And last week we looked at the seed of hope, right? This beautiful idea that when we plant the seed of hope in our life, it takes root through the understanding of salvation and changes how we view salvation and eternity. And that, and as we understand salvation, brings about the fruit of gratitude in our life. And we ended by saying, if you live a life that you struggle with being grateful or having gratitude toward God or others, you probably have not fully cultivated the seed of hope in your life. Well, this week we're going to take a look at a topic and a challenge that I think any of us that try to actively follow Jesus struggle with on a regular basis. And I think that's why Paul and Timothy deal with the idea we're going to look at today early on in this book. And the question I got for you this morning is, do you ever just get frustrated trying to follow Jesus, to follow the teachings of Jesus? Maybe you know them, right? Maybe you've studied them or you're hearing them for the first time as we go through different teachings, the idea of loving your neighbor, even loving your enemy, praying for your enemy, all these commands and teaching, submit to one another, all these things. And you're like, I try, it sounds good when I hear you teach it, but then I get home and I am angry, I'm upset, it just is not working. And we kind of go on this cycle, and it brings to mind this passage that I used to hate in the Bible, out of 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 14 and 16, and it says this, "As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance," basically before Christ, "but as he has called you who is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, since it is written, you shall be holy as I am holy." Now, when I hear this, that sounds like a standard that I am not capable of meeting. And you think about it, it says, as it was written, this passage is referring to multiple times in Leviticus, like 11 through 20, when God was giving the law to his people. He was pouring out commands and he was saying, live up to this standard and you will understand me better. But I remember when I first heard this Peter passage taught, the way I received it was that I must strive to be perfect, just as God is perfect. And it kind of set me on this roller coaster ride of following Christ. I'd work really hard for a period of time to not do bad things, to do the good things I knew I was supposed to do, and then something would happen, right? I'd slip up, some temptation to sin would come into my life, some circumstances would catch me off guard, I'd make a decision, and I knew I wasn't like God in that decision-making process. And then all of a sudden, my spirituality would seem to crash like the stock market does sometimes. And then we would start this idea of recovering it back again, like I just lost all those gains I had. Now I got to work back to where I was. And I would get on this cycle of striving to please God, failing, feeling guilty, then feeling disappointed, then anger. And it would go over and over and over again, right? Striving, I'm going to do better this time, guilt, disappointment, and anger. And ultimately, it led me to somewhere. Because instead of then, I was like, you know what? I've tried being perfect as God is perfect, so I'm not going to strive for 100% anymore. Let me shoot for 90%. Let me just shoot for a little, maybe not quite perfect. Maybe I can do 90. You know what? I couldn't even do 90. And it got me on that same cycle. Let's try 80, 70, 60. And it finally got me to this point where I was like, I can't do this. It's not even worth to put the effort anymore. And I became apathetic in my faith. And maybe you've been in that circle of striving, guilt, disappointment, anger, that then leads to an apathetic view of faith and who God is and understanding Christ's teachings in your life. And the truth is, when I said, I can't do this, if that's the expectation, then I must not be doing this right. And the truth is, I wasn't. It was a realization that the proper teaching of holiness helped me understand that I was not doing this right. And this is what the passage we're going to look at today in Colossians helps us understand. There is a pathway to holiness, but it doesn't begin with us just trying as hard as we can. Instead, we will see it comes from another seed that we need to plant and cultivate in our life to see the fruit of holiness begin to appear in our life. It's not just an effort I've got to give, but it's a pathway that we walk down. And we're going to see this in Colossians beginning in chapter 1, verse 9. So let's look, we'll jump in to see what the seed is that we're focusing on this morning. And it says, so from the day, he was talking about earlier, as they were praying for them, we have not ceased to pray for you as a church, asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding. I believe the seed that we need to make sure is planted in our life to grow in holiness is the seed of wisdom. Wisdom. These words in Paul and Timothy here are refreshing words. They're praying for these new followers and for you and I to possess and be filled with the full knowledge, wisdom, and understanding that God possesses. And this kind of wisdom is found in knowing that in the completeness of God. That God is complete in all of these things. Wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. So it makes us ask this question, what is wisdom and what will it do? And Paul and Timothy use two words here to help us understand this idea, that help us understand what wisdom is. And the first thing I want you to see about the idea of wisdom is this: it changes the way we view information. Information. We live in a world that is obsessed with gaining more information. I don't know if you know this, but over 2 million books are published every year. 2 million. Most of them are never read by anybody who wrote them, right? Right? But and there are over 2 billion websites in the world, not pages, but websites that you can visit that have multiple pages under them. There are 50-plus million catalog books in the Library of Congress, an additional 75 million manuscripts. There are hundreds of news channels, talk shows, all spewing information 24/7. And if we just take this down to the Christian perspective, right, the same is true. New books come out every day teaching us how to better approach prayer, how to be a better disciple, how to grow spiritually, how to study your Bible. There are numerous podcasts of every topic and every preacher you can think of. There is not a lack of information. Yet there is often a very distinct lack of wisdom. And the truth is this, because wisdom is more than just gathering information. In this passage, we see that the authors use two words to help us better embrace the concept of wisdom, and it's the word knowledge and understanding. And I want us to look at those two words this morning to help understand this pathway to wisdom and holiness. And the first, it says knowledge. Verse 9, it says that you will be filled with the knowledge of his will. What is knowledge? I want you to first understand what he's talking about here is that knowledge is divine in nature. This is what we're experiencing when he says, you will be filled with the knowledge of his will. I want you to catch something here. Man does not create knowledge, but instead we discover the revealed knowledge of God. Now think about that for a minute. Because we often think, oh, I got a new idea. I came up with something, right? You may say, I may be a wise person, but not because I am the source of wisdom or I created some new way of living or thinking. No, it's because I have tapped into the knowledge of God's will and his truth. It is like digging down and finding gold in the ground or oil or whatever valuable diamonds. You didn't create them, you found them. Knowledge is divine in nature. It's not something you and I create in here, but we discover it. And that's beautiful to think about because it's not up to me to come up with these grand ideas or truths. They are out there. God is giving them to us. They are divine in nature, which means, secondly, that they are directional in purpose. Man does not discover knowledge for self-fulfillment, but for following and implementing the will of God. Knowledge used on ourself often brings selfish and painful consequences. Knowledge is not given us to accomplish my will, but his will. How many times have you seen in a movie, right? Like something great, powerful weapon, and it's used for one purpose, and the bad guy is like, I'm going to use it for my own good. And what happens? You know, he blows himself up, he blows the world up, whatever. It's never a good outcome when something's not used the way it was designed to be. And God is the same way. His knowledge of how things operate, and that's what knowledge is becoming aware of something, becoming aware of some truth, of some external aspect of life, something like God exists. There is sin. Lying erodes trust. Those kind of things are knowledge that we can hold on to, things that we become aware of, but we did not create it. It's divine in nature and directional in purpose of implementing God's will. So that's knowledge. And then it brings up understanding. It says understanding is the other pathway to wisdom. It says that you would be filled with all spiritual wisdom and understanding. So what is understanding? First, it is expanding one's perspective. We see things beyond our own view, and it's through God's view. God's view is complete and comprehensive. It is like the idea of being in a submarine and you're rolling that periscope up and now you can see everything above you and what's around you. a view you never had before. When we tap into God's wisdom and his understanding, we start to see things in a way we never did before. And I'll just give you the simple idea of this is the concept of love, right? We grew up with this idea of love and being loved and showing love, usually has selfish origins. That if for me to feel fulfilled, I need someone to love me and love me well, pour into me. That way I am getting something. But God's idea of love, God's perspective on love is that as we love others, right, we are experiencing a fullness we never have before. It's like a reverse idea. That's an understanding that comes from saying, yeah, we need to experience love, but yeah, it comes to us in a different way. It expands our perspective, but the second thing it does, it is improves my position. Now, I don't mean this to take advantage of somebody else, but what it means is that God is inviting us to make use of his wisdom and his understanding. Not for my glory, but for his glory. As I see things in new ways and understand things in new ways, as my perspective broadens, as this knowledge is becoming part of my life and I'm using it and my understanding and growing, it should improve your position in life. Maybe not financially, maybe not vocationally, but as far as experiencing peace in your life, experiencing hope in your life, what meaning is true pleasure in your life. All of these come when our understanding is birthed out of this knowledge. So if knowledge is becoming aware of something, understanding then is understanding how something works. Like God is good and wants good for me, so that means I have value. Or sin erodes my character, and so thus it will influence my relationships with others. So there's always consequence. It's those kind of ideas. Knowledge is understanding, becoming aware of something. Understanding is understanding how that something works and operates. Let me just give you some biblical examples here to think about. So a knowledge is this. Come to the knowledge that God is the creator and sustainer of all things. Right? So we come to that knowledge as we pursue God. But what does that mean in understanding? It means that there is nothing in my world that is not known and understood by him. Now, if you understand that concept, it changes the way you look at your world. Right? We go, oh, yeah, there's a God. Right? Maybe we know that. But understanding then, if he is the creator and sustainer of all things, and nothing in my world is not known or understood by him, my level of trust and what we're going to talk about, my level of being willing to follow him goes through the roof. What about this one? Just as God has loved you, you should also love others. That's knowledge. That's like a principle to follow. But the understanding of this is this. Expressing loves to others, I'm not doing it just for their good. It helps me better understand and experience the love of God myself. That's understanding. Taking the principle, the knowledge, and allowing it to become personal in your life. This is the beauty of wisdom, the seed of wisdom. It's not just taking more information. This is not just information, right? This is knowledge and understanding that changes my perspective and my position. That's what wisdom does. And once wisdom is planted in our life, we're going to see what takes root, and it's in Colossians 10, 1, 10 through 12, and it says this. So, all this to say, so then, as you do this, as to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God, being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, for all endurance and patience with joy, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. Again, we're going to see here what the root begins to what begins to take root when wisdom is planted in our life is the root of obedience. Obedience. When we hear the word obedience, like we think about this, walk in a manner worthy, fully pleasing to him, bearing fruit in the good times and the bad, like it starts to feel like work again. Like I got something to do. Doesn't have a, usually has a not have a positive connotation. Obedience doesn't. We have to do something we don't want to, but obedience to wisdom, I want you to hear this. Obedience to wisdom is actually a beautiful and wonderful thing. And when true wisdom, not just information, is taking root in our lives, then obedience grows naturally because it is fueled by the perfection of God. Perfection of God. If his wisdom is perfect, his character is perfect, the truths, the knowledge, the understanding that is being poured into our life, then as we follow those, as we step to follow, we follow in perfection. We're following a perfect example. Obedience is not a list of tasks to follow. Instead, in this passage, we see that it is a path to follow. Tasks just have outcomes, but a path has a destination. So what is the path of obedience? I'm going to give you a couple things to think about. It says here, verse 10, it says to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord. So walk in a worthy pathway. Now, this does not mean just look good, look nice, walk in a manner worthy of God, like get dressed up, do this, make sure you don't mess up along the way. No, what this is, walk in a way that is reflective of the wisdom of God. Follow the signs. If you know the wisdom, if you know you're having an argument with your spouse or your child and there's principles and knowledge and understanding that God has given you, put them to use. That's what obedience is. Use the tools you're given. Walk in a manner worthy of what you say you believe, is what he's saying here. Follow the signs. Don't get off trail. Be worth following. It's the idea. I know when we travel, Katie and I and the kids love to travel. I like to sometimes go somewhere before I take somebody to a place so I understand where I'm going and how to get there. I grew up, I loved going to Disney. When the kids got old enough, we started going to Disney a lot. Well, I had been, and so I knew every pathway around that park. So we would get there, and I was like, we're doing this first, and this, and this, and we would get everything done by 1 o'clock in the afternoon because I knew the pathway to take, and I knew a little secret with the fast pass things at that time, too, that's no longer there. But we would know what to do because somebody had been there, someone was leading us who had walked that path multiple times before us and knew the way to go. Pitfalls and the perils along the way, but also what was the most valuable path to take at the right time. This is what walking in a manner worthy of God is. It's following his steps, following where he is going. But then it says in verse 10, again, the second part of verse 10, do this bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. So now we don't just walk, but while we're walking, stop and practice wisdom in the compelling moments of our life. Those moments that are just life-shaping times. When you know what you do in this moment is going to affect what comes next. It's not just a normal day, a normal moment, but big decisions of your life, big moments in relationships. Is practiced wisdom there? And this is reflective of the compassion of God. In those moments, those big moments, stop. Let knowledge and understanding guide you. It says, so that you bear fruit in every good work and you're increasing in the knowledge of God. And these are opportunities to express wisdom over just spouting out information. Our temptation when we come to these big moments in life, maybe it's just an argument with a spouse that feels pivotal. And what you can choose to do there is show compassion and put knowledge and understanding to work in that moment, or you can just spout out information. Well, you did this, you did that. Remember this, that's just information. It's not knowledge and understanding. Same way with a job or how we view circumstance that comes our way. And so it's engaging in the most important moments of life, engaging the wisdom of God fully. But also as you're on this path, realize that you're going to have to expect moments of trials and difficulties. It says in verse 11 that being strengthened with all power according to the glorious might for all endurance and patience. He would not tell us that we need endurance and patience unless there's going to be trials and difficulties. Right? And this is reflective of the perseverance of God. That there, do not be fooled. You will face trials and difficulties. There are dark days in your future. There are difficult days in your future, but wisdom is the pathway through those as well. I don't know if anybody watched football last night, but the Jacksonville Jaguars and the San Diego Chargers played. At one point, San Diego was up 27-0. The quarterback threw 5 interceptions. Had another, there was a punt, went off a guy's helmet. The guy scored. They scored right after that, down 27-0. Right before halftime, Jacksonville quarterback led them down. They scored a touchdown. Just kind of felt like, you know, okay, this whole first half wasn't a loss. I was watching the interview on the way out. The coach, they interviewed the coach of the Jacksonville team, and they said, what do you tell your team? You're basically, you've lost this game, you know, haven't you? He's like, you know, we're just going to keep steady pursuing. What happened in the first half is not what's going to have to happen in the second half. And you know what happened? If you watch the game last night, they came back and won 31-30 on a last-second field goal. Changed the mindset they came out with in the second half was not what happened in the first half. Did they experience trials and difficulties? Yes. But do you know what they did? I don't know what they talked about in that locker room. They probably should record it for other people. But they put some knowledge and wisdom to use, knowledge and understanding to use, and said, we're going to start making wise choices moving forward in the second half. And they did. They had talent, and it made it happen. It was amazing to watch. And this is, happens in our life. There are times when you're going to feel down 27-0. But the game is not over. It's not done. The key thought I want you to grab here is this. Obedience is not an obligation, but an opportunity. An opportunity to experience the wisdom of God put to work in your life. Which leads us then to the last part here. Briefly, it says in Colossians 1:13-14, then as you do this, that he realized he has delivered us from the dominion of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son Christ, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. And this brings about the fruit of holiness in our life. Now, when we think about holiness, we realize now it is a result of wisdom being planted in our life and obedience taking root in our life. This is what he means when he writes that we have been transferred from the dominion of darkness into the kingdom of Christ. And through this kingdom, we experience forgiveness that is produced by the redemption of God. God taking the difficult, dark, hard moments, the times when we have acted without wisdom, and bringing forgiveness and bringing wholeness of the of holiness into our lives. A couple of things I want you to grab about holiness, and then we'll finish. Holiness is not trying to live a perfect life. I told you I've been on that journey before. When we do this, it just leads to regret. We live a life of regret. I should have done better. Why did I do that? I said I was going to be better this time, and I wasn't any better. It just leads to a life of regret. When we think the standard is us being perfect. But holiness is this. It is allowing the perfection of God's wisdom to flow in our life. We do nothing to hold back, stymie, and stiffen back the redemption of God, the holiness of God working in our life. I'm not working against the wisdom of God. I'm not taking what I know to be bad behavior and imploring and putting it into practice and trying to keep God's wisdom at bay. What I seek to do in my life is not to be perfect, but to get the blocks out of the way that are keeping the wisdom, perfect wisdom of God, from flowing fully in my life. And this leads to redemption. And it causes the redemption of all things that's in our lives and in all of creation. So think about this. Are you allowing the seed of wisdom to be put into your life? To then allow the root of obedience to begin to form, and realizing obedience is not an obligation but an opportunity to then allow the true fruit of holiness to be expressed in your life. Not as perfection, but in allowing the perfect wisdom of God to flow. Question for today is this. Where are you ignoring the wisdom of God? If you're here, you're often here, you've heard principles, you know knowledge, you're growing in understanding. But many times what keeps holiness from flourishing in our life is when we deliberately choose to ignore the wisdom of God. Where is that happening in your life? Let's pray together. Father, it's easy to get on either side of this holiness issue, to think, I'll just do better next time, work harder. Perfection is up to me. God, you showed us in this passage it's not. It's just a simplicity of getting on a path of letting your wisdom flow in our lives. So God, help us not to err on the other side of creating blockades in our life that keep your wisdom from flowing in and being planted in our hearts and in our minds, so that obedience can grow and wisdom will bring the fruit of holiness. God, I don't know where we all struggle in here. I don't know where it is that we need wisdom right now. I do know we all face the temptation to rely on our own ways, trust our own hearts, lean into our own understanding. But God, help us to lean into your wisdom fully today, and to know that that comes with transferring us from the kingdom of darkness into the beautiful kingdom of light through Christ. Help us to experience that today.